One. Hello, America, to our friends around the world. I'm Dave Hodges, and this is the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And I announced that I will be attending Charlie's funeral, going to a memorial tonight. We're still reeling. We really are. But there is some good news around the world. And we have a terrific guest, a repeat visit by Shaheen Gobadi, who's a member of the parliament of the true Iranian government that is in exile. But we think that that might change. And we're going to talk to him about that. First, he'd let you know we're coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. And Noble Gold is our sponsor. Gold's the number one appreciating asset. And I'll tell you what I love about being a customer of Noble Gold. They don't push you. You have to literally close your own deal. They're just there to answer questions and facilitate your interest. And I've had a long association with them, both as a advertiser and a client. And with all of the upheaval in our financial system right now, you need to take care of what you've already earned and protect it. And the only way I think to do that is through gold and silver. And this is the company I've chosen. I want you to call at the end of the show. 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347, and tell them Dave Hodges sent you. Well, Shaheen Gobadi really needs no introduction. I keep coming across references to him with regard to Iran, and Shaheen was on prior to our strike against Iran, and I actually got a prediction right. I said, I think it's coming because we're not going to allow that criminal regime in Iran to become nuclear. And President Trump did take assertive action. And the Iranian people are in some chaos, but I think they're united along some fronts. And to talk about that, Shaheen has agreed to come back on the show very graciously. It's great to have you back on, my friend. I really appreciate the work you're doing.
Oh, Dave, it's always a pleasure to be in your show and to talk to your very good audience. The pleasure is mine. And I hope you had a very good summer and looking forward to a very good autumn.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And I'll tell you, what'll make my future a little more bright is to take these good Iranian people. And I've met a lot of Iranian people in America, and they're all united. They do not want what's happening in their country to continue. And these people I've met, Shaheen, are cordial. They're caring. They're intelligent. And the people in Iran do not deserve this. So let's just backtrack just for a second. Tell me right now what life is like in Iran for the average person.
Well, they are, despite the fact they are living in a very, very prosperous nation full of resources. And as you said, they are very talented people. Look, Iran has about 1% of the world population, but has about 7 to 8% of the world minerals. So that tells you a lot. Is Iran has the fourth oil reserves in the world, second gas reserves in the world, all sorts of minerals. Very huge country. But despite all these realities, because of the regime ruling there and their policies, the Iranian people are living a very, very miserable life. Socially, they are suppressed. All their basic rudimentary rights are taken away from them, from freedom of association, gender equality, freedom of thought, freedom of reading, writing, all basic freedom that defines decent human being and a decent society. And in addition to that, from a welfare perspective, they are living in a very, very miserable situation. 80% of the Iranians, even according to the regime's own standards and their own statistics, live below the poverty line. Overwhelming majority of the Iranians have a lot of difficulty to make their ends meet. You will be maybe surprised, maybe not, that Iranians, a lot of them have to sell their body organs like their kidneys
Oh,
to
really?
survive. Yes, and
Really?
that's quite a tragic situation. More than 50% of the young people are unemployed or underemployed. Many of the people who have very high education, university degrees, one, two, or three, have becoming taxi drivers simply because there's no jobs available. The only people who are well-to-do affluent are the regime's cronies, which are obviously a very, very absolute minority, or the Revolutionary Guards Corps. the arm that the military apparatus that the mullahs built to preserve their grip on power, who are the main entity for repression at home and terrorism abroad. And they are the ones who plunder the people's wealth. To have a good sense of what we're talking about, more than 50% of the Iranian economy in all the major sectors are controlled by IRGC. Oil and gas exports, a lot of imports, they have their own peers. So this is the type of situation we're facing. But as you said in the introduction, people are totally, totally fed up. They are looking for a total change. So the situation is very restive. Every day, there are protests and strikes by people from all walks of life and all backgrounds, pensioners, teachers, nurses. And this is not limited to one part of the country, but throughout the country. And to put things in a nutshell, in the last 7 years, there has been five major nationwide uprisings in Iran. Actually, tomorrow marks the third anniversary of the big uprising called Mahsa Amini Uprising, if you remember, that started in September 2022 and went on for several months. And that clearly showed the Iranian people's profound desire for regime change by themselves, for themselves, not going back to the previous monarchy of the Shah and his dictatorship, but rejecting both the monarchy and the current theocracy, looking for a true, true republic. And, one could hear their voices and their chants that, done with the oppressor being the Shah or the supreme leader. So despite all the crackdown and the regime's heavy-handed policy, we can see the growing sense and desire for regime change. So there's a battle between the Iranian people, overwhelming majority of them nationwide, and the regime. And the momentum has definitely shifting to the people's side. There are still a lot of challenges ahead, but from all indications, the regime's grip is loosening, is getting weaker and weaker, and the final showdown is getting closer.
Why do you say it's getting closer? Where will the main shift take place in terms of resistance?
Well, first of all, there is a nationwide resistance movement in the forms of an organization called the People's Mujahideen Organization of Iran, also known as MEK, which just last Saturday, I mean, the 6th of September, celebrated its 60th year of, anniversary, which means that they fought against the Shah and they fought against the mullahs for the last 60 years. And this kind of a perseverance only comes from a deep grassroots support inside the country. And people from all generations, actually, there are four generations of Iranians who have joined this resistance. This has come in the backdrop of more than 100,000 of them being executed by the mullahs and several hundred thousand others being incarcerated and tortured. Yet young generation is joining in big numbers. And it was evident in the big protest in support of the Iranian resistance just past Saturday, the September the 6th in Brussels, in which tens of thousands of Iranians from diaspora, from all over Europe, came to Brussels to show their support. And inside Iran, they're organized in the form of what's called resistance units, which are affiliated to the People's Mujahideen Organization of Iran, or MEK, who are growing in numbers despite huge risks that entails for them. And they are much more active, in trying to shatter the regime's grip on power. So these are very clear signs that the regime has failed, not only from a repressive perspective, but also regarding the people's hearts and minds, especially young generation. And you know what? You're talking about it in their state media, that their propaganda basically is not only not attracting the youth, but the youth are rejecting them, and the resistance is becoming more and more attractive to them despite all the all the regime's propaganda.
That's interesting. I'm wondering here about the tactics, though, of the resistance, like your National Council of Resistance and people that might stem from that. What kind of resistance are they offering? Is it just informational resistance? Are they taking direct action against government interests? What is this looking like inside Iran?
National Council of Resistance is basically the political body of the resistance. That's like a parliament in exile, as you said in your introduction. It calls for a separation of religion and government, for total equality, gender equality, a non-nuclear Iran, mutual amicable relationship with the rest of the world, market economy, And that's, as I said, like a parliament in exile. And it's presided by Madame Maryam Rajavi, who the NCRI has elected to be the president for the interim period when the regime is overthrown. She will lead the government for a maximum period of 6 months to set the stage for a free and fair election to choose the next National and Constituent Assembly and to make sure that the transfer of power to the people is tranquil. But inside Iran, this is these resistance units which are working diligently inside the country. They, many times not only are engaged in information war, they also burn the big pictures of the regime supreme leader Ali Khamenei, all the symbols of the regime, to encourage the youth to join. Also, they put the big banners of Madame Rajavi in highway cross paths, and many acts of defiance of all sorts to basically show to the people that the regime is not as strong as it wanted people to believe, and the people's power is much stronger than the regime did not want the people to believe. So they are basically targeting many of the regime's, as I said, symbols, statues, big banners, especially at night. And what's good about this resistance unit, Dave, is that they are ordinary people that, basically, they are very, very local, and they are part of the society, like teachers, students, professionals, technocrats who are working diligently to bring this change about. And also, they are a key factor in organizing protests and strikes, giving them directions, basically lead them. And also, whenever there's an opportunity, they foment them. So you can see they're like the engine for change. Obviously, that takes a lot of courage and a lot of risks. Many, many of them get arrested. As on just past July 27, two of the members of this movement were hanged in Iran. One was 69 years old, the other one was 48. But they were very courageously basically held firm for their beliefs. And now today, as we speak, 14 others are basically on death row. And there are many, many, many more who are now facing very long prison terms. Any association with this movement is basically guilt by association, and that can bring huge risks. But despite all of that, as I said, more and more young people are joining because they see this is the only hope for change. You see, Dave, I think that it's very important to make it clear that while Iranians are looking for change and are striving for change, they are not advocating a foreign war. They are not asking for boots on the ground from foreign powers, United States or the others. They are not asking for any military assistance from the United States or any other country. They are not asking for any funds from any foreign countries. All they want is good policy. And I think that's very important for the world to notice, that the Iranian people want to bring about a change by themselves, for themselves. They have a clear vision. They have an organized resistance inside Iran. There is a very viable democratic alternative in the National Council of Resistance of Iran with an identifiable leader in Madam Maryam Rajavi as the president-elect, with a very clear roadmap and with a lot of international recognition. You see, Madam Rajavi has introduced a 10-point plan, which has enumerated the basic points which I just enumerated, like separation of government and religion, gender equality, total freedom, and non-nuclear Iran. And this has been endorsed by the majority members of the U.S. House of Representatives in a very bipartisan way. Many, many prominent U.S. senators, very, very top former U.S. military commanders, as well as the majority members of the British House of Commons and House of Lords and the French Parliament. All in all, 4,000 legislators all over the world have endorsed this plan. So you see, what I'm trying to imply here is that the Iranians are doing everything humanly possible to bring about a change by themselves. They have a viable alternative. They have a viable plan. They have a recognizable leader, which has been a key element to bring about all this change. And that's what makes the mullahs very worried, that the resistance is having all the right elements, despite massive crackdown and all sorts of terrorist acts and nefarious conduct.
What is it going to take for critical mass to happen to where there is a regime change? How do you see that happening?
You see, the situation is so explosive that anything can spark it. Obviously, it will come to a big, big uprising and a revolution. You have to remember, I just mentioned there were five major nationwide uprisings in Iran in the last 7 years alone. And if one reviews them, each one was bigger than the previous one, more pervasive, more inclusive, more less generative gap, most transformative, and the demands much more crystal clear. First, people rejected any hope of reform from the regime. Their chants were hardliners, reformers, this game is over, which meant that people have no hope of any change from within this regime. They kissed it goodbye. The next round, they started chanting death to Khamenei, the supreme leader, which meant that people basically know that they have to get rid of the regime in its entirety. And in 2022, their main chant was down with oppressor being the Shah or the supreme leader, which meant they are very clear-eyed that they don't want to go back to the dictatorship of the previous regime, which was a totalitarian regime on its own right, namely the Shah and the monarchy. So these are clear signs that people are obviously have much more understanding of the path they want to take. Also, first it was in 170, 80 cities. Next round it was 200 plus cities. The last round it included more, almost 300 cities in all 31 provinces. People from different ethnicities joined in. And these are very important signs. It shows that there is growing unanimity among Iranians, no matter what's their ethnicity, no matter what's their background, no matter. And also in the last round, you saw even Gen Zs got involved, as well as I said, middle class, as well as, pensioners, as well as retirees. So when things get to this point, basically the ground is shifting underneath of the mullahs. So actually they themselves very much keep warning, even the state press, even the regime's own experts, that the way things are going, another uprising looms on the horizon. That's inevitable. And that's why, Dave, we have seen in recent months a very, very massive stepped-up crackdown against dissidents, because the regime knows that the situation is so explosive that these people, these activists, are like the tip of the arrow. They are like the sledgehammer. They are the ones who will lead it, basically, when comes the right day. So basically, when it will be, what it takes to trigger this spark, nobody knows. But so many factors. Look, 3 years ago today, literally, who could have thought a death of a Kurdish girl in Tehran would spark a massive, massive uprising? But it happened. 2 years before that, the increase in the gas prices has sparked it. So many things can basically trigger the uprising. That's what makes the regime, and especially its supreme leader, very worried. And you know what? After the war with the US and Israel, Khamenei kept warning that, we have to be very much vigilant about sedition. We all know what does he mean by sedition. Sedition to the uprising to him is sedition. The enemy within.
Yes.
Actually, I think it's very clear and very important to realize that the regime's main war is with the Iranian people. That's the underlying war that will determine the future of this country for the not only Iranians, but for the region and for the world.
I look at one of this regime's allies in China, and the way they're very unpopular in China right now. The youth, like you've described in Iran, are very anti-CCP. But the way they main control is to control your life, basically total information awareness, so to speak, total data control, control over your bank account, control over your job, where you live. Has the Chinese shared these strategies and technologies with the mullahs to repress the people?
Well, the mullahs have tried to get every kind of experience from any part of the world you can imagine for repressing Iranian people. Any technology, any form of techniques you can imagine. But I think what's the key element, which I think, Dave, is very different here, is the existence of a resistance movement. An organized resistance is the game changer. And mullahs fully understand that. And that's why they have tried to eliminate this factor, but whatever they have, not only by repression at home, but also terrorism abroad, literally. Also by a massive, massive demonization campaign, trying to basically push this wrong narrative that there is no viable alternative to the mullahs, or if they go, Iran would be synonymous with chaos. And then they have done this through internet, through this their quote unquote, experts, through the quote unquote think tanks who very much basically parrot the regime's narrative and talking points. But now I think they have reached the end of the game. What do I mean by this? Obviously, they impose a very severe censorship on the Iranian people, especially the youth, through internet. But Iranian youth have become very, very internet savvy. Through VPNs, they break the censorship, and they have access to daily world events, and they're fully abreast of the resistance presence and activities. Actually, they are the ones who provide information to resistance. I'll make one example for you, Dave. The National Council of Resistance of Iran has been the key and the primary source of revealing the Iranian regime's clandestine nuclear weapons program. It was us who
Really?
told on them about secret, nuclear facilities. Actually, over the years, in the last 3 decades, we have made 133 revelations of various secret nuclear sites, nuclear projects, key scientists, and so on and so forth. Actually, if it were not for our revelations, most likely the mullahs would have had the bomb by now. But how we do it? Again, based on the massive network of resistance activists who are like the eyes and ears of the resistance, and in reality, like the eyes and the ears of the world about the mullahs' drive to get nuclear weapons. So basically, the mullah censorship has failed. Also, for years, they have resorted to, as I said, massive, massive demonization campaign. This has failed. Even there's a satellite TV that broadcasts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week into Iran with the news of the resistance and gets information from the activities of the activists from inside Iran as well and sends it back to Iran. So basically, what I'm saying, the regime has totally lost this information war. And that's why the youth, a lot of youth, see the reality, and that's why they are joining. It has been a long process, very arduous process, but again, we have overcome a lot of hurdles. You see, when it comes to the policy of international community, the biggest link, missing link in all of this has been not seeing the role of the Iranian people and the organized resistance. The minute you bring this into the equation, the whole paradigm changes. And that's what makes the mullahs very much paranoid, because they realize, the minute people realize there's a viable democratic alternative, very indigenous and self-relying, their end would be very near.
Well, I look at what's going on in the Iranian government's ally in Venezuela and Maduro, and I would be very nervous if I were the mullahs, because my feeling, Shaheen, and this is of general belief in America, regime change in Venezuela is coming, and it's going to be sooner rather than later. Is there a relationship in people's minds between what's happening in Iran's ally in Venezuela and what could happen in Iran?
Yes, you see, even closer has been what has been the regime situation in the region. You see, this regime has relied, Dave, on two pillars for survival in the last 40 years. One was repression at home, which I just mentioned, treating women as less than second-class citizen, basically misogynism, outright repression, executions, hangings. Iran has the highest number of execution per capita in the world.
More than China? Looks like Shaheen is frozen in his communication right now. That's a surprising statement that Shaheen just made, because we don't necessarily hear about Iran being the most repressive regime in terms of what he just described. We usually attribute that to other nations, but my goodness gracious. But he is painting a picture of total repression and absolute total control through intimidation and physical brutality. This is a remarkable time. I'm hoping we can get him back, because I wanted to hear how he thinks that regime change is going to come. And I don't think it's maybe it's not an accident that this transmission was interfered with. And here we're getting to a real critical point in the interview, and Shaheen Gobadi just disappeared. This regime, and we didn't get to this in this broadcast yet, but in the previous broadcast, Shaheen is exiled in Paris, along with the president-elect who will take over if there is indeed a regime change. One of the things also we learned in the last interview, and I'll ask him this if we can get him back on, is there's two militaries in Iran. One protects the mullahs, they're smaller in number. And one is more like, I almost look at it the way he described it, like a National Guard. It's not a perfect comparison, but it goes down the line that these aren't professional soldiers or career soldiers, but they're greater in number. And regime changes usually happen in autocratic societies, either through violence, and a lot of times this group I'm describing, this second military close to the people, could be the ones that bring it. Sometimes the leaders feel danger and they flee for their lives. The Shah of Iran was a perfect example of this. And then regime change happens. Unfortunately for the Iranian people, they got someone just as bad as the Shah. So it looks like we're getting Shaheen back in. He just chimed back in. And we're going to ask him, how's this government going to fall? And I'm going to give him a few options, and maybe he'll come up with one that we don't think about here. And I think we have Shaheen back with us. I've been ad-libbing here a little bit, Shaheen, filling in some details of our past interview. Can you hear me okay?
Of course, as I was saying, sorry for the interruption. So as I was saying, is that in addition to repression at home, the regime's other pillar has been export of terror and crises outside of the Iranian border. And this has been how the regime has survived for the past 4 decades. But that has received severe blows in the last couple of years. Like the regime's proxies, like Hezbollah, has been basically. Has been received very serious blows. Houthis have had very serious blows, but and the it came to a crescendo last December where Bashar Assad and the Syrian regime, which was like the linchpin of the regime's regional strategy, basically was overthrown in 11 days, and that made the regime very worried. So in that sense, you are correct. The regime's international situation and standing has become weaker and weaker and weaker, and that has become a nightmare for the regime,
Yeah.
because they have said time and again, they have said time and again that if we do not fight this war outside of Iran and in Iranian periphery, they have to fight it with their own people inside the country. And now this is exactly what's happening. So yes, if the mullah's allies go. And there's a big changes in those countries. The regime will feel the heat, and that's exactly what they're worried about. So that has very much compounded the regime's woes and concerns.
Well, I understand the reign of terror against the leaders of the resistance because Assad in Syria was toppled because the rise of really a guy that was an organized crime, but he was powerful and he opposed Assad, so Trump backed him. And Shaheen, I have to believe that if such a leader were to appear in Iran, he would get CIA support. And I'm sure the CIA is on the ground doing what they can do right now. Do you know anything about that?
I simply don't know what obviously different intelligence agencies are doing in Iran. But you see, there is an identifiable democratic leader in Iran. As I said, her name is Madame Maryam Rajavi, is actually a
Yes.
woman, which, again, for a misogynist regime like the mullahs, has been very devastating that you see a woman organize such a massive resistance against them internationally and as I said, this whole movement. With a lot of international recognition and making a lot of headways against the mullahs. Because this has not only been a political war, but also a cultural war. Again, as I said, to see a woman standing up so strongly against a misogynist regime like this. And last, Saturday, as I said, September the 6th, we saw tens of thousands of Iranians came to Brussels from all over Europe to express their support for her and her 10-point plan and her call for regime change. But again, while rejecting appeasement, obviously, also saying no to the foreign war, saying third option. You see, Madame Rajavi for years have maintained this idea that the only solution for Iran is a regime change, but by the Iranian people and the organized resistance at its core. And I think that's what their policy should be. You see, they, as Madame Rajavi has said time and again, we are not seeking boots on the ground. We are not seeking financial aid. We are not seeking military aid, but rather good policy. And what does a good policy constitute? First of all, a truly tough sanctions on the regime, so it would not be able to sell oil and gas, because any dime or penny that the regime gets is either used to repress the people or used to go for nuclear weapons or used to stipend the proxy groups, or is plundered actually by the regime's leaders or the IRGC. Number two, to hold the regime's leader, especially the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, accountable for all his crimes against people and against Iranian people all these years, crimes against humanity. Just a case in point is they, you might know it, you might be shocked to know, 30,000 political prisoners, 90% of them belonging to the People's Mujahideen Organization of Iran, the main resistance movement inside the country, were massacred in few months back in 1988 by the regime. 30,000 political prisoners were massacred in a matter of 3 months. And none of the regime's officials who were all involved have been held accountable. So there is plenty the international community can do on this. And the third, but I think very important, is to recognize the right of the Iranian people and the organized resistance to bring about a regime change by themselves. I think that's very important that the world community explicitly and unequivocally come out and say, yes, the Iranian people and the organized resistance have the right to bring about a regime change. And that's all it takes. That's all it takes. That's all we're seeking.
Yes,
So
okay.
if
I
not,
understand. But there's critical turning
and
points in any regime change. And let me give you a few briefly here and let you comment. One is the leaders like the Shah became fearful for his life and he fled, and the regime change happened after he left. And that's probably the most common. The other is through absolute violence. And unless the civilian, the military closest to the civilian, not the protectors of the mullah, rebel, I don't see that happening. The other is total economic collapse, and the business leaders behind the mullah that need them for their existence no longer need them because their businesses are in disarray, and the regime collapses that way. Which one of those, or do you have another scenario where the regime can't change could happen?
I think the first and the third are combined. Basically, what I'm saying is that I'm not going to say that Khamenei will flee or he will abdicate the power, but you definitely would be in a form of an uprising and a form of a revolution that people will challenge the regime in its entirety. And credit to what you just said, when the regime's cronies feel that the days are numbered, they are the ones who will jump the ship. You know, when the old saying is that when the ship is sinking, the rats are the first who will jump out of it. That's very much likely to happen. But, and that's what the regime's, a lot of officials and even experts are warning that the ship is sinking. You see, Khamenei is in a very big bind, very strategic bind. Okay, on the one hand, he has maintained the situation by going for nuclear weapons, by repression, by supporting terrorist groups. But it looks like it has run its course, basically. Now, either he will retreat and will try to take a different direction that will totally expedite his overthrow. And as we said, the whole system will fall apart and the whole system will crumble. And he knows this and he has seen it time and again in history. Or he will hold firm and continue the same direction that will become confrontation with the international community, totally inevitable. And also, the confrontation with the Iranian people inevitable. So basically, he's caught in a rock and a hard place, and they know the clock is ticking fast. Actually, you know, Dave, next Tuesday and Wednesday, I'm talking about 23rd and 24th of September. during the United Nations General Assembly, when the
Oh.
all world leaders will go to New York, Iranians in big numbers, actually thousands of them, Iranian Americans from 46 different states will come to New York to talk about Iran problem and the third option. They will say, they will basically chant that, look, no to foreign war, no to appeasement, go for the third option as been advocated by Madame Rajavi. They will be there in big numbers, as I said, thousands of them. And I think that's very important that the American people will listen to them. There are very good Iranian Americans, who, as I said, they are technocrats, professionals, university professors, students, entrepreneurs, who will come to New York from 46 states, including Arizona, by the way, to New York on 23rd and 24th of September to echo this message. So the message is picking momentum. And as you said, the clock is ticking fast.
I can see that, and our conversational tone about this has really changed since the first time we talked. And I'd like to get your reaction to something. We, along with Israel, took definitive action against suspected nuclear sites in Iran. What was the reaction to that attack from the Iranian people? I know what the government's was, but what about the Iranian people?
I think that's a very good question. You see, for years, the regime and its proponents and its advocates, maintain this narrative that, oh, if this regime is attacked, that the response would be very fierce. If the regime is attacked, the Iranian people will rally behind the flag and, they will be united against the regime. Far from it. Far from it. When the regime was attacked, Iranian people basically were in exodus to leave Tehran. Millions of people went to the north, far away from the battle scene. Nobody came to the support of the regime. And you saw the regime's leader, Ali Khamenei, basically took a hiding for, 20 some days and nobody knew where he was. So basically, it clearly showed the regime is much weaker than it wanted people to believe. And the Iranian people, in no way or any shape and form, rallied behind the flag. The Iranian people love their country. They're very patriotic country people, but at the same time, they distinguish between their country and the regime. They found the regime enemy of their country. And as I said, obviously, some people thought that the Iranian people have to uprise during the attacks. That was also very naive. You don't expect people to come and uprise when they're being bombed. That's not going to happen.
I
But
agree.
at the same time, and you know what? Even after that, the regime tried to show some facade of unity, and that didn't work. That didn't work. As you said, you know what the government and the regime tried to do. Even their attempt to depict this failed very quickly because the situation is much more pressing than this.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. There's something else I wanted to ask you about. In our social media, alternative media, stories were appearing prior to our first interview that Iran was telling Trump, if you act against us, we'll initiate attack teams on you. And they said they had about a dozen, I guess you'd call them assassination teams, all designed to go after Trump and his family. How legitimate is that threat, and what do you know about it?
Well, you have to remember, this regime in the state is sponsor of terrorism in the world.
That's true.
It
That's true.
has. And you see, this regime has an entity, the IRGC has a section of it called the Quds Force, which is by definition and by design for extraterritorial operations. You have a regime which has an arm of its military just for operation outside of Iran officially. That's, you remember the dreaded Commander Qasem Soleimani, who was taken out in 2020 in Iraq by the US. So this regime recognizes no borders, no boundaries when it comes to terrorism. A lot of our activists and representatives have been gunned down in broad daylight in Geneva, Switzerland, in Rome, in Italy, in Istanbul, in Turkey. You name it, and I will claim it. I know the dissidents have been killed in Vienna, in London, in Paris, and elsewhere. And there has been a lot of attempts in the US also, but they have been foiled. So nobody can underestimate this regime's terror apparatus. Let me make one example. In 2018, June 30, the National Council of Resistance of Iran was holding its annual big event in north of Paris, okay, part of Europe. There were up to 100,000 people attending that meeting, with hundreds and hundreds of dignitaries from the United States, Europe, members of parliament, and so on and so forth. The regime's official diplomat was based in Vienna, was given the assignment to bomb that meeting. And guess what? He went to Iran, took the bomb, put it in his own personal briefcase, and flew an Austria airliner flight, commercial airline, with women and children on board to Vienna. Who on earth would fly a commercial airline with a bomb? This is the type of regime that we are talking about.
I know.
He went to Vienna using his diplomatic, immunity, drove to Luxembourg, gave the bomb to would-be bombers, who drove to Paris to, blow up that meeting. In the last few hours, the plot was foiled. The would-be terrorists were arrested, and a bomb was found in a trunk of the car and was, basically deactivated. Eventually, that terrorist diplomat was arrested with his three accomplices, and they were put on trial in Belgium, and he was given the maximum sentence of 20 years. Again, you know what happened? The Iranian regime took a Belgian as a hostage, and the Belgians.
Oh my gosh, we get to the punchline of the story here, and unfortunately, Shaheen is MIA again. Interesting. We get to the crux of another important story, and we get interference. Is that not, shall we say, suspicious? I find it to be very, very interesting. The system, it's interesting. I'll give you a technical report here. Usually, I can disconnect a guest myself. Unfortunately, I'm not able to do that. I'm looking right here at the controls, and I should be able to click on, and I think Shaheen has taken himself offline now, so he'll be coming back in just a moment. But that's really interesting. We got to the crux of his story. Wow, that is amazing. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we didn't get a chance to talk to Shaheen about this, and I don't know if we will because our time is short, but Russia can't help Iran because they're occupied. And losing Syria, they lose overland supply routes. So Iran's going to get no help. China is very limited in what they can do in the area because they got their hands full in the South China Sea, and I believe they think that Venezuela is a more important ally to try to give support to. And Chinese has actually put some of their top airplanes inside of Venezuela, which I believe was what initially spurred Trump's actions. Yes, he's sincere about getting rid of the drug exports to America, but he's not going to let Venezuela be turned into a Chinese base of military operation. So Iran stands isolated. They're on their own. And it's interesting now, too, because you heard Shaheen mention members of parliament and other governmental leaders, including the UN, are now standing in support of what he's doing. So I think we're going to get Shaheen back in here again. Taking a long time to load the link here. Well, that's interesting. I think we have him back. Shaheen, interesting. We get to the crux of an important conclusion here, and you're taken down.
Okay, let me repeat what I just said. So you have a
Sure.
regime that, as I said, uses terrorism as a statecraft. It's decided by the regime's supreme leader, and it's implemented by the National Supreme National Security Council, which is the highest body presided by the president. So you are basically what I'm trying to say is that terrorism is interwoven. It's in the DNA of this regime.
Sure.
So I will always take this regime's terrorist threats seriously.
I do. But I was just telling my audience when you were taken off air again that Russia's occupied. They can't help. China is overextended in the South China Sea in that region, and they're now trying to have some influence in Venezuela. But we're seeing they're a paper tiger. They're not going to be able to intervene. So Iran basically is standing alone. Do you agree with that? The mullahs are on their own.
Totally. Totally, you're totally. The regime is totally isolated internationally, and they know it. They, you know what? They the situation is so grave that they, as I said, many of this is now surfacing in their own state press. They said, "Look, don't count on the Chinese and Russia's come to our help. And they realize that they are totally isolated. As I said, regionally, Assad is gone. Their proxies are taken down. Nobody international is going to come to their help. The nuclear issue has become a big headache. Now, even the major three European countries, Germany, France, and UK, have activated the mechanism to reimpose the UN Security Council sanctions that were suspended because of the 2015 nuclear agreement. So basically, all the chickens are coming to home to roost at the same time for the Supreme Leader.
Well, part of the reason I think your regime's still intact is because of the actions of some previous presidents and the aid that they let get through, but that's over. So there's another extinction point there of support. And it looks like Iran's dying a slow death. I just hope the people of Iran can hasten the departure of the mullahs. Now, let me ask you something. I want to talk about post-fall of the Iranian government and what's
If I
going
may add something, Dave, on that, you touched again on a very good point. The previous policies of what we described as appeasement, providing concession after concession to the mullahs,
Sure.
definitely provided unwarranted lifeline to them. It was totally against the interests of the people, totally against the interests of the world, and we saw the results. And we saw the results. So you're absolutely correct. It's time to say goodbye to this policy once and for all, because appeasement not only doesn't work, it's in a devastating disaster to the detriment of the Iranian people, to the detriment of the organized resistance, and to the detriment of the world peace and security. So you're absolutely correct on that.
Yeah, appeasement never works. We've got lots of historical examples. But what I wanted to talk about in the few minutes we have left is when the regime change comes and your party is able to take over with a female leader, which I think is shocking to the world, but I think it's a great symbol for what's coming. Are we going to see a constitution, or what kinds of reforms are we going to see?
No, you will see a new light, a new chapter. As I said, there will be total separation of government and religion. You will see gender equality. You will see total freedom of association, thought. You will see rights for the ethnic minorities, like particularly Kurds, within the territorial integrity of Iran, because these people are not secessionists. They want their autonomy, which is their right. You will see a non-nuclear Iran. You will see an end to death penalty. You will see in Iran, which would be a very, very constructive member of international community with mutual amicable relationship with the rest of the world. And this is the type of Iran that you would see would be propelling for progress. Obviously, there will be a lot of work to do. Now, there's a clear roadmap. When the regime is gone, the NCRI will act as the transitional government for a maximum period of 6 months. This has been stipulated explicitly. The main task would be to set the stage for a free and fair election to choose the next national and constituent assembly. And when people's representatives are elected, the NCRI's mission is over. So they will start writing the new constitution, and Madam Rajavi will be at the helm to make sure there's a smooth transition and there's a peaceful transition. So there's a very, very clear roadmap about what comes next. You see, our main task is to return the sovereignty to where it belongs, to the Iranian people. That is their country, and this is their right.
You know, Iran could be such a prosperous country with the minerals, the oil. It could be just fantastic. And they could have a great trading relationship with the United States. Not just the world community, but I think that the trading bloc could really get cemented. And President Trump's enough of a businessman to see that and try to make that happen. So I hope the regime change happens sooner rather than later and before Trump leaves office. That's what my hope is for Iran.
Dave, that's what I'm hoping to. That's why we are striving. And as I said, listen to the message of Iranians in New York on September 20 and 24. There are good Iranians, good Iranian Americans, thousands of them will come to New York to again say, look at a new option about Iran. No appeasement, also no foreign war. A third option, as Madam Rajavi has said, change by the Iranian people and the organized resistance. And I think a lot of good Americans would appreciate that. that Iranians want to bring change by themselves. They're not asking for anybody to give them money. They're not asking anyone to give them weapons.
Yeah.
And all they're asking is a good policy, which I think they will identify with. And if people are interested about this movement, I suggest them to go to our website, which is ncr-iran.org. I repeat, ncr-iran.org, and follow us up in social media about the New York protests and other events. It's about time to hear more about the resistance. This has been the missing voice when it comes to Iran, Dave.
Not that it would do any good because sanctions filter down to the lowest denominator and the elite usually are unaffected. But do you think, at least symbolically, the UN's going to impose sanctions?
Actually, there's a lot of debate. Actually, there were sanctions, but they were suspended because of this nuclear agreement back in 2015 during the President Obama's term, which was totally flawed and, as I said, gave unwarranted concessions to the regime. The time has come to put them all of them back on and even tougher sanctions. Look, this regime has to be held accountable for all its crimes, and these crimes have not only been against Iranians.
Yeah, well,
It has been against the people in the whole Middle East, against the whole Europe, against the United States. So again, I submit to what you just said. Appeasement never works, never worked. And when it comes to Iran, it was disastrous. Hold the mullahs accountable and hear the voice of the good Iranians organizing the resistance who want to bring about regime change. I think that is the change and shift in paradigm that's long overdue.
Well, my hope for your leaders like yourself and your president-elect who are in exile, I hope your security is good because the Iranians
Well, Dave,
may have a
to be
farming.
honest with you, thanks for all your good wishes. But, so many good young Iranians have lost their lives in this battle. But I appreciate your concern. But I think we have lost so many good friends and colleagues and people who put their lives on the line. But most important thing is to see Iran free and democratic and, as you said, friendly with the rest of the world. That's the one we are living for. That's what we are striving for.
Well, a free Iran is a major assist to the revival of nationalism in America, because the mullahs have allowed their resources to be used for nefarious purposes around the world. You know that it's not just their own interests, but they get co-opted by outside interests to the detriment of the planet. And this is why if people are saying, well, I don't live in Iran, I don't care about Iran, and we're going to get some of that. The thing I would say to those people is this is a huge movement. A regime change in Iran is a huge movement towards world peace and less terrorism. I mean, a lot less terrorism. And I think that what you're doing and what the president-elect is doing is fantastic. And we wish you all the best. America is rooting for you. And there is an awareness in America, as I'm sure you know, that our war is not with the Iranian people. It's with these crazy theocrats that are running your country into the ground. And they're threatening world peace and world security. And that's who America opposes, not the good Iranian people. And I hope if anyone from Iran hears this broadcast, you'll realize that we're on your side. We're not on the side of the leaders that oppress you. Shaheen, always good information. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time to be on with us. It's much appreciated. And continued good luck and good work.
Thank you, Dave, for having me, and thanks for all your good wishes and all your good endeavors. And once again, I wish you and all your listeners and viewers the best of times this fall and for months and years to come. And let's all endeavor to see a free Iran much sooner. Thank you so much for having me, Dave.
Thank you, Shaheen. Take care.